Overseas Service League, Washington Unit. How did you happen to go overseas, Edna?
Well, in around 1940, I had a series of personal tragedies, and I wanted to go to Paris and get my degree in French at the Sorbonne, but Hitler was on the rise, and so I couldn't get a passport to Europe. But two of my friends were military, doctors' wives, and they were in the Philippines, and they said, come on out to the Philippines. So I told them to get me a job, and they happened to know the principal of Brent Episcopal Private School in Baguio, and they got me a job, and so I set sail in August for Baguio. And there I was teaching junior high math when on December the 7th, 1941, the Japanese dropped about 120 bombs around our campus on Baguio. And 20 days later, the Japanese interned all the Americans and British and the Allies, the people that were in Baguio. And first we went to Camp John Hay, which had been an R&R military camping place. And that was too good for us, though, for we were stuck in a barracks that was supposed to hold 125, but they had 500 of us there, so you can imagine how much space we had. Then later on, the Japanese wanted that camp for their own officers, so they moved us up to another camp farther up in the mountains that had been a constabulary camp that General MacArthur had used to train the Philippine soldiers. And there we stayed quite some time. I can't recall offhand how long. And we lived in very miserable headquarters. At first, the Japanese wouldn't let the husbands and wives live together. And so we had nothing but a tennis court to walk on. And for many, many nights, we had to stand up practically. And we only had a handful of dirty rice morning and night, and that was it. After a while, when the Japanese had conquered Singapore and Hong Kong and all of the rest of the places, they became more solidified, so then they let us sort of more or less try to live our own lives. And we had one good commander, Tomibi-san, and he let us have school in an old barn, and he let us have our religious exercises. There was about 500 gold mining engineers and their families, and a lot of missionaries that had come from China and established their foreign languages school in Baguio rather than go home. So we were a mixture of hard-biting, hard-cussing mining engineers and religious people of all faiths, practically everything, Jewish, Catholic, Protestants, and Mary Noel people, and that sort of thing. But we tried to, at first it was very, very much of a mess because nobody knew what to do and they all expected to be rescued right away. But it's too bad that it happened at that time, because if it had been later, our children would not have been caught with us. They would have been sent home to their mothers and fathers in the various islands that they came from. But school, see, was in session on December the 7th, so we were caught with about 100 children, and we had to sort of look after them. Well, as I said, we had a pretty good man, and he let us have, as I said, the church and the school, and let us go on and carry on our own business, more or less. And although we had nothing to eat except what I told you, and only what we stood up in, and and sometimes we didn't even have, we didn't have beds for a long time. And we slept on the floor, and the first nights or so that we were captured, we had to even stand up all night, and we just had a spoonful of water for about 2 days. But as I said, as they became solidified, things became a little better for us. But later on, we were moved another time, and finally when MacArthur was coming in, I'm cutting this very short, in the 1944, they moved us from Baguio down to the lowlands where 5,000 Americans were in a camp that you probably know about, Santa Tomas. But we were put in a political prison called Bilibid Viejo. It was right outside of Santa Tomas. Till finally, when MacArthur came in, and it was very bad, there was the Japanese were retreating in 44, and the Americans were proceeding against them, and we were between the cross artillery fire and pinpoint bombing, and MacArthur told us to leave our little political prison and come and walk, those of us who could, the sick and the old went in trucks from Manila's Santa Tomas to his headquarters, Balintawak, which was the old brewery. That was very terrible. And then later on, after things were a little bit better, they brought us all back to Santa Tomas. I'm going over this very fast. And then it was there that I decided to wait for my fiancé who had been on Bataan. So I didn't come home with the others when they were rehabilitated. I stayed there and I joined the Red Cross. And of course I had to buy my uniforms. They only gave me a half the salary because I'd been hired overseas. I had to buy my uniforms out of that. But even so, we had pretty good quarters as a Red Cross person. We lived in some private houses for a while, and then we lived in, I was in a blown out apartment house. It had this roof blown off, but and it didn't have any water. We had to carry the water from the fire faucet upstairs about four or five floors. But in the Red Cross, we helped all we could.
Edna, what kind of work did you do with the Red Cross?
Oh, that's a good question. I was administrative assistant. I was at Zorbron, which was the headquarters, and I acted as information there to the soldiers that came through and wanted information.
That was right in Manila?
Right in Manila. I was administrative assistant right in the headquarters. And Edith Miller, I think, who might still be alive, was my boss. But then later on, when the Red Cross went on to Japan, they didn't take me for some reason, maybe because I was hired locally. So then I got a job with the government. The government, the Army needed teachers. They had so many boys that were illiterate. And so I got a job with information and education. I didn't wear a uniform with that. But in the morning, I taught these illiterates, and I had to, in 6 weeks, get those soldiers up to a fifth grade education, or they were going to be kicked out. And that was too bad because some of them were married and had children. Then at nighttime, I taught blacks and whites and colonels and everybody that wanted high school and college English and college Shakespeare. I taught in a Quonset hut with rats and those geckos dropping their tails all around. But I had a wonderful time.
I wonder if everybody's going to know about the geckos, what they are.
They're little a tiny, tiny, minuscule alligators who drop their toes, their tails.
Are they something like a lizard?
Yeah, tiny lizard. That's what they are. Yes, that's the...
Now, and did you stay in Manila then the whole time, or were you transferred?
I was stayed in Manila from 1947 to 19... I mean, from 1945, the time I was released, to 1947, I came home. I thought it was about time. I had been a teacher before the war, 25 years or so at Fort Washington, an Army fort in Prince George. And I thought I better get back to the United States because my fiancé didn't come through till later. But anyway, I came back to the United States and I taught 3 months in Washington, D.C. Then I had a hankering to go overseas and see what made the Japanese tick and do that job on us. And so I went down the Pentagon again and got a job in information and education.
Was that a civilian job?
No, I was a DAC, a Department of the Army civilian. And they sent me to Japan, to the 1st Cavalry, the outfit that released me from the prison camp.
That must have been interesting. Oh, did you see anybody you knew? Did you meet any?
Yes. Well, I was with the General Chase and that outfit. And I lived on the base there in a Quonset hut, and I taught in a Quonset hut there.
That was in Japan?
Yeah.
Near Tokyo?
Yes, right out. It's called Asakusa, right outside of Tokyo. And then I also became a testing specialist. I gave the tests for those boys that wanted a high school education. It's called a high school equivalency. And then I gave tests for those that had more than 2 years, that had 2 years of college. So that was very interesting.
And how long did you do that, Edna?
Well, I taught in Japan from 1940, for 2 years. My contract was 18 months. I stayed, and I went all over Japan. I taught the 11th Airborne up at Sendai, and the 7th Infantry just was moved into Korea just before the war broke out, and I had taught those boys.
Uh-huh. Did you ever go back into the Red Cross?
No, only as a volunteer. A couple of years ago, I did about 1,000 hours on the blood mobile down here at the Washington headquarters, and also in the section giving the boys coffee, you know, and
yeah,
donuts while they gave blood.
Well, that was very interesting.
I love that.
Yes. You're not doing volunteer work right now?
Oh, I'm doing loads of it, but not with the Red Cross.
Okay.
I am helping to feed 75 senior citizens three or four times a week down to New York Avenue Presbyterian Church.
Oh, I understand. Well, tell me, is there
one
any?
Thing. That's only one thing I do.
Yeah, you do several volunteer things,
yes,
right?
I'm on
well, getting back to your overseas.
Yes.
What would you think was your most memorable experience?
Well, I think the most wonderful thing was, of course, before I became a Red Crosser, was when General MacArthur came in and saved all of us. That, of course,
can you tell us what happened? I mean, did you see him?
Oh, it was so wonderful. Yes, as a matter of fact, at one time, after I was released, I think they wanted me to teach their boy, but I didn't want to be a governess, and I was in the Red Cross then, and I told a friend of mine, an English woman, Phyllis Gibbons, that she had been a governess in England, and maybe she would do, so she took over the job. She became MacArthur's governess.
Well, that's interesting. Do you know where she is now?
Well, I think Phyllis is dead. When I went through in 1950 to Oberammergau, I stopped in England and saw some of the English women who had been in prison camp with me. Among them was Betty Rochefort Boyd, who was cousin to the Queen, and Viola Macmillan, whose husband was a cousin to Prime Minister Macmillan, and Daphne Byrd, whose husband had been a famous architect, and their husbands had all been in prison in Hong Kong during the war.
So did you know them in prison too?
Yes, yes.
You knew, were they prisoners in Manila, you mean?
Yes, they were. That's where
before they went to Hong Kong, I suppose.
No.
Oh, well, maybe I misunderstood you.
No, their husbands were captured in Hong Kong. And yes, they were from Hong Kong too, but see.
Oh, and the wives were in prison?
The wives came to Manila because they thought that they would, you know, get out of the way of the Japanese. They didn't know they were going to be interned again.
Yes. Well, that's interesting. Do you think of anything that was particularly, oh, I don't know what to say, humorous or something that you'd like everybody to know?
At one time, I would go down to the Japanese headquarters and try to act as a fool, and so that one of the men that went along, Jimmy Halsema, who was intern, who finally finished with USIA as a big official, but he would go down and listen to the Japanese radio while I tried to divert the attention of the Japanese officers.
How did you do that?
Well, I did some crazy actions.
You mean you played like
I
a jester?
Played footsies, yes, just like a fool, like a jester, to divert their attention.
And you played footsies with them?
Yes, that's it.
Oh,
that's
my goodness. And that must have been shocking. Did they fall for that?
For a bit. He was able to listen to quite a bit while I was acting as a fool. And in the prison camp on Saturday night, we put on some different things to keep people's mind occupied. I told all about the state of Maryland things, and then we put on plays. I was on in a play or two. And at one time, the Japanese said, "Can we take part too?" So they put on a sword dance for us. Can you imagine that?
Well, how about that? They were quite cooperative, weren't they? This was when you were a POW.
That's right. That's
or intern. Is there anything special you would like to say about going overseas? How do you feel about it? Did you regret going? Were you glad you went?
No, I never regretted it one minute. As I said, in this prison camp, I had a lot of bad experiences, but I looked after a little boy who was half British and half American for a long time, and that helped to keep my mind off myself. But in the camp, I listened to all the different religions, and I fell in love with the Episcopal Book of Common Prayer, and I became an Episcopalian, and I will be until the day I die. I said I wouldn't take anything for this experience. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but I wouldn't take anything for it, because that's where I became as much of a Christian as I ever will be, and I learned my sense of value. The best things in life are free.
That's great. That really is.
Your country, your friends, your relatives, beautiful nature and books. And the Japanese finally did let us go over and ransack the library out of the Camp John Hay, so we had some books for a while.
And the Philippines was beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were on the top of the high mountains, a mile high, among the headhunters in Baguio.
Did you find them too?
Oh, we
saw. The headhunters?
Oh, there were lots of them there.
They weren't as bad as the Japanese, I guess.
No, the Japanese were never too bad to us. We had one of them was pretty bad because they found two of our military men as guerrillas out in the mountain, and they put them in with us because they didn't know what to do with them. But theoretically, military and civilian not supposed to be together. And theoretically, the military is supposed to try to escape, and they did try to escape. And that was very bad for us because if we'd have been in the hands of the Nazis, they would have decimated every 10th woman and child. Mm-hmm. But instead of that, the Japanese took our good commander away and gave us a terrible one that was real bad to us.
Mm-hmm.
But
And you didn't have much to eat all that time?
Nothing but a handful of dirty rice. We got one package of Red Cross food in 1943, and among them was even some woolen underwears, which we couldn't use in the Philippines.
That was not where you needed
it. But we used them to make doll babies and stuff teddy bears for Christmas for the kids. And we had, for Christmas, we had a brown paper turkey. But the Christmas in 43 was a nice one because that was the only time a Red Cross package got up the mountains to it. And we really had a wonderful time with that. That saved our lives. We ate one teaspoon of Spam a day for a year almost to the end of the war. And I want to say that the Japanese saw that every civilian and soldier got his package of food wherever they were. Highest in the mountains, they saw that they got it.
That was mailed, you mean, to them?
No, they carried them there in the jeeps.
How did the packages get there?
Oh, they came by ship to Manila,
And
then they came up the mountain to us.
Well.
Now, the people in Manila, I had three cousins there, and by the way, I had three cousins that came in as military engineers and helped to rescue me, and I had a nephew who was a little Navy gob out on the ship in Manila, but he didn't know I was there.
Could you write any letters while you were in camp?
Well, I wrote one, and it was a one man. You know, money talks, so the Standard Oil and General Electric, two representatives in the Far East, they were allowed to go home on that...
Kung Song?
That one ship that came back, and they carried little notes to our relatives in the States to tell them that we were alive, and... That's the only thing that...
Did you get any mail? Did you receive any
mail?
No
mail.
Nothing.
My people never heard from me for almost 4 years.
And you didn't hear from them?
No, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I bet they were glad when you could write them.
Well, I didn't come home, as I say, till 47.
No, but you could write, I suppose.
Yes.
Afterwards. Where were you actually on VJ Day, the end of the war? I know it went on for several days, but where were you, in Manila?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Would you do it all again?
Yes, I would.
Do you think of anything else special you'd like to add to this?
Oh, there's so many things, but I don't know where to begin or end. There's just so many things.
Well, thank you very much, Edna. I think that was most interesting.